The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Throughout the course of this year, we've commented a number of times on just what has happened this year alone. You can remember the killing of Qasem Soleimani back in the early part of the year, right at the start of January, in fact. Well, before that, the attack on the U.S. embassy. And then Soleimani's taken out. Then you add the Australian bushfires and on it goes into the impeachment, coronavirus, the lockdown, cities going up in flames, the George Floyd killing, and so on and so forth. And now you can add this massive blast in Beirut to the list of sobering events. And this year, huge blast, 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate. If you compare that to the Oklahoma City bombing back in the 1990s, they used 2 tons of ammonium nitrate to blow up the Murrah building, or to blow up half of that building. This blast was over 1,000 times more powerful, as you see all this footage from miles away, windows being shattered, buildings right around the blast just incinerated. It looked like a miniature nuclear bomb, and in fact, you can compare it to that when you just look at the tons of ammunition that went up in flames and in smoke. The videos of the destruction, they speak for themselves. As I say, it blew out windows miles and miles away. The port area there, you can see it's right on the harbor. Just destroyed. People heard the blast 150 miles away in Cyprus. It had the force of a 3.5 magnitude earthquake. That's how massive this blast was. The Beirut City governor, I guess that would be the equivalent of a mayor, he said Beirut is a disaster city, and the scale of the damage is enormous. He called it a national disaster akin to Hiroshima. You just look at some of the pictures of the destruction. It truly does look like a nuclear blast. So far, and Brent Noctegal, by the way, is working on an article as we speak. So far, there's at least 100 people dead. That's surely going to go up. 4,000 people wounded. This is how the AFP reported on the devastation. It says an entire port engulfed in fire, ships ablaze at sea, and crumbling buildings. The site of twin massive blasts in Beirut's harbor resembled a post-nuclear landscape. And again, this is supposedly an accident, and it probably is. But still, just the devastation. What a wake-up call this should be. And how many more scenes are we going to be seeing like this in the years ahead? If you look at what your Bible prophesies, what does God say? What did Jesus say in the Gospels? He said, except those days should be shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. This is just a drop in the bucket, and it should serve as a wake-up call. Add it to an already lengthy list of stunning events to happen just this year. Just this year. It's pretty amazing what has happened already in just a matter of months. We better get familiar with scenes such as this. It really is shocking to think about what could happen. Evidently, this tonnage, all of this explosive material came in on one ship. It came into the harbor on one ship. I think it was several years ago. And here it's just held in this storage facility. You had Hezbollah, I forget when the clip was from, Carolyn Glick tweeted it out yesterday, the Hezbollah chief, talking about how they can use ammonium nitrate to make bombs to fire at Israel. Perhaps that's what this was for. I'm sure Brent will give us some more detail on the backdrop here. But if you step back and just look at the bigger picture, Lebanon, surprise, surprise, like many other nations in the world today, Lebanon, before this blast, was a nation on the brink. The economy was collapsing under the weight of lockdown. I think Lebanon as a whole had something like, before yesterday, had something like 80 or 60, maybe 60 or 70 coronavirus deaths. That's it. And yet, like every other nation, they just got swept up into lockdown mania. Its economy ground to a halt. The currency in Lebanon had lost 80% of its value since the start of the pandemic. How about that? This is before the harbor was blasted yesterday. It's just one crisis after another. What a symbol of what's happening all over the world. Here we're just going forward, groping in the dark like blind men, coming up with one policy after another. Andrew Locher from headquarters was telling me yesterday about the face mask policy that the Edmond City Council put into effect. It doesn't go into effect, evidently, in another 2 or 3 weeks. So there's a window here where you don't wear the masks. Then it starts in late August and goes through late September. Then someone said, well, that's not long enough. So they said, okay, well, how about October 12th? Just throwing figures, dates out there. And then it doesn't even start for 2 weeks. And they're projecting ahead. We've got to wear the mask on October 11th. Well, of course. They're just making it up as they go. And then look at the potential for all of these other events that haven't even happened yet. What happens when we wake up to a blast, whether it's an accident or an attack? Either way, this is the world of today. It's a world in turmoil. These are not normal times. What a wake-up call this could and should be. Now the people of Lebanon, they're going to be finding it difficult just to get a little money out of the bank. Everything's in crisis mode. They thought the lockdown was bad. Now wait for the hyperinflation. Now wait for the starvation. Now wait for the potential civil war. If you think about what the prophecy says regarding Lebanon and its break from Iran, this looks like it'll certainly accelerate that prophetic development. From The Spectator, it says several Lebanese friends and contacts messaged to say that this could only be Hezbollah, the Shiite militia and shadow state in Lebanon, even if it's not true. And again, it probably isn't, but people are upset. People are calling for heads. The economy's already in shambles. And you've got a nation there, deeply divided along three lines. But Hezbollah, they're calling the shots because they're the strongest militarily. It says, even if it's not true, it shows what some Lebanese are thinking and therefore how this crisis might develop. It says, if Hezbollah are in any way to blame for this, it will be very bad for Lebanon, even if the explosion was an accident. The devastation is widespread. Save the Children says that its teams on the ground reported entire streets wiped out. People are frightened and furious and looking for someone to blame. The Lebanese Prime Minister, Hassam Diab, has declared that tomorrow will be a national day of mourning. Diab, who is Sunni, gave a televised speech and said, I promise you that this catastrophe will not pass without accountability. Those responsible will pay the price. Is this what it will take to bring Lebanon out of Iran's orbit and into that Psalm 83 camp? I'll leave it to you. Look at the King of the South booklet. Search for Psalm 83 at thetrumpet.com website and see what is prophesied in your Bible. It's about time for us to wake up and to consider the sure word of Bible prophecy. No one does it. It'll be interesting to see what kind of coverage this even gets in the United States, because they're too concerned over there about the president's tweets. And here's this massive blast that just takes out an entire harbor. And we'll just dust ourselves off and carry on, I suppose. Add another tragedy to the list. Add another crisis to the list. Yesterday, we showed you that video that had surfaced regarding the George Floyd arrest back over Memorial Day weekend. And the minutes and minutes of footage, you saw the tail end of it. Everyone saw that. The United States is never going to be the same because of that footage. And yet here is footage that was carefully concealed so that you didn't get the whole picture. And as some few commentators are now asking, there should be more. Why haven't we seen the whole story? Well, it's been carefully concealed by the Minnesota Attorney General, Keith Ellison. He comes from the radical left. He has admitted he didn't want that video to be shown because, well, it might get in the way of a fair trial. In other words, he wants this tried in the court of public opinion, where everyone is in agreement. Yes, this was an abuse of power on the part of at least that one officer, but then probably the other three that stood by. Then you see what led up to it. Then you see the resistance, resisting arrest. Then you see this man who later dies, talking about how difficult it was for him to breathe even before he was on the ground. Then you combine it together with the other tests that have been made done, or the autopsy, all the drugs that were in this man's system. The jury's going to get the full picture. The jury's going to get all the details. And as I said yesterday, what if the verdict doesn't please the mob? You talk about a toxic mix. Here's a black attorney on Fox News last night, Leo Terrell, who commented on the additional footage that we've now seen, clip 8.
Let me be very clear. I think the Attorney General overcharged this case. Second degree murder, I don't see it. I see voluntary manslaughter. And I think this tape helps the officers because the officers were following police procedure. To me, they did nothing wrong. George Floyd was resisting arrest. That's shown on the tape.
He was resisting arrest. You can see it. Now, a jury's going to see it. In the case, well, in the opinion of Terrell, as I say, he's a black attorney, a civil rights attorney. In his opinion, it's not second-degree murder, it's manslaughter. And this tape helps the other three officers who were there witnessing the event because they were, as Terrell says, they were following police procedure. As they repeatedly told George Floyd to get into the car, to submit, basically. And he wouldn't do it. So here's an AG in Minnesota who wants this tried, as I say, in the court of public opinion. Now, the United States has never been the same since Memorial Day weekend. We've seen our city. Shocking video. Add it to the list. 2020. Cities, entire cities. Minneapolis, New York City, Fifth Avenue in New York City. Going up in flames. And then reporters out in front of fiery infernos saying it's mostly peaceful. Yeah, it's going pretty good out here. Add it to the list. What did Jesus say? He said in the last days, unless God shortens this, there wouldn't be anybody left. There'd be no flesh saved alive. So our cities, we've got to do it. We've got to burn them for justice. We've got to pull down the statues for justice. We've got to delete our history for justice. I've talked about this article at the American Mind, the COVID coup, the COVID coup. And you know what the Democrats, you know how they think when a crisis comes along. It's like Rahm Emanuel said years ago, never let a good crisis go to waste. You've got to use the crisis. You've got to take advantage of the crisis. From The American Mind, I've given you this quote before. It says, in short, COVID-19 is not America's plague. It did not shake America. The ruling class shook it. They have not done it ignorantly or by mistake. They've done it to extort the general public's compliance with their agendas. We're just supposed to follow along with their agendas, as they're just making stabs in the dark about how to handle this crisis. In fact, there's a much more sinister motivation at play here. They're using the crisis to try to rig the U.S. election in November. We've written about this at The Trumpet. We wrote about this before the pandemic. This has been their history, the Democrats. They don't accept a Republican victory. They just don't. They'll do everything they can, even after the fact, to try to overturn it. And I'm not just talking about the year 2000 with Bush Gore. This is just the way they operate. They'll, like my father has written, they will do anything to seize hold of power, to return to power. Listen to, again, another black commentator, Candace Owen. Listen to her, Candace Owens, I guess it is. Listen to her talk about, she's stepping back here and looking at the bigger picture of 2020. And this is her assessment, clip one.
This is the greatest rigging of an American election that we are all playing a part in right now. You are telling me that first and foremost, we don't see the candidates. Right? The candidates aren't allowed to travel. They can't talk about their policies. Who knows? They're already saying now, New York Times, that they need to not do debates, right? So we have the left who is completely hiding their candidate. That is their strategy. We're going to hide Joe Biden so you never have to meet him. And at the same time, we're going to tell the current president that he can't travel, but if he does any events, if he has, you know, a room full of people, that it's all dangerous, it's against safety measures, and it's not right. Then you have them talking about mail-in voting, which we know is corrupt. We know it's corruptible. We know that it allows for tons of rigging. The second coronavirus hit, my second tweet, and this is when conservatives were playing it safe. Everyone was like, oh, I don't know, maybe 8 million people are going to die, you know, my second tweet was, this is going to be about November election and they're going to request mail-in voting. Now we're having that conversation now. I said this back in March. Mm-hmm. Now people are starting to talk about the fact that Democrats are pushing for mail-in voting.
Think about this again. I said this the other day, but before 2020, just the thought, okay, we're coming up to an election cycle, and how about this time we don't see the candidates? One of them hides in a basement. The other one can't get out because if he goes public, people are going to get sick. And then the people who vote, they can't go to a voting booth. They'll get sick. So mail-in voting, which just clears the way for all kinds of fraudulent activity, as she explains there. She was out in front of the commentators back in March and April, as was this program, by the way. This is from the COVID coup article. It says, by the time COVID came over the horizon, thought of using it had already crossed the ruling class's minds. No conspiracy was necessary or possible. No conspiracy necessary because it was, in fact, a disease. Now, they did overhype it for sure. They made it sound much worse than it actually was. But it did nevertheless kill people, mostly elderly people with vulnerabilities, comorbidities. So they saw this coming over the horizon. They struck out with Trump Russia. They struck out with, he's crazy, the president. They struck out with, tax returns, his businesses are corrupt, the fraud, all this, that, and the other. Then, of course, Ukraine, desperate. You talk about a desperate attempt to take him out. Who in the Democrat media complex even cares about that phone call to the Ukrainian president? How ridiculous that was, even at the time. And yet they had everything invested in that for a short while. Didn't work out. It did not work out, and then they very quickly move on as they saw COVID-19 coming over the horizon. It says the existing party sentiment and like-mindedness were enough to produce the unanimity and uniformity with which the ruling class has used the COVID-19 event to produce, stoke, and maintain fear to energize its constituencies constituencies' agendas in pursuit of its power. In pursuit of its power. That's what it's about. Listen to the rest of this clip from Candace Owens, clip two.
At the same time, you have them. We had an economy that was absolutely rallying, right? Economy used to be the expression, it's the economy, stupid, right? So this gave Trump the upper hand going into the election cycle, which is fair game. He's been the president for 4 years. He had a strong economy. Now they've crashed the economy, forced a ton of people that maybe would have been considered some conservative voting if they had a job, their lives were together. Well, now they're relying on the left's socialist system. They're relying on stimulus checks. And that means that they're going to be more inclined to vote for someone who has more socialist perspective because they're not allowed to work. Right? So that naturally puts them out of a category of voting that they would have maybe been in if things had been normal, right? So we've seen all of this stuff happen, and we're supposed to think that November is not being impacted by all of this. Of course it is, right? This is the greatest rigging in American history of an election.
The greatest rigging of an election in American history. Of course, it's all meant to impact the election in favor of Joe Biden. That's the hope. That's the hope for the Democrat media complex. And so you've got the president out front saying, you know, this mail-in voting, that's going to be a disaster. I'll get to that more here in just a second. Just to finish on the COVID coup article, it says, we're supposed to believe that all this is dictated by science, this lockdown, that is. It says, in June, 1,200 health experts signed a letter approving the BLM protest because it said white supremacy is a lethal public health issue. But it cautioned that this should not be confused with a permissive stance on protests against stay-home orders. So you can't protest for that. That'll get people sick. But BLM and Antifa, hey, they've got free range. They go wherever they want. They can do whatever they want. This article says, in short, coronavirus restrictions, like the rest of political correctness commandments, are pure political weaponry. Nothing short of an inversion of the American people's priorities, accomplished by nobody's vote, ruling class presumption. It says, in short, we're living through a coup d'etat. We are living through a coup d'etat. That's what Candace Owens is describing in that clip at the Daily Caller. Living through a coup d'etat. Now, the trumpet, we've had a lot to say about rigging elections. Even this year, a couple months ago, will the radical left use coronavirus to steal the U.S. election? That was 2 months ago at thetrumpet.com. You can look at that article on your own time. Will it use coronavirus? Never let a crisis go to waste. They're certainly not letting this one go to waste. Even before all of this, pandemic, lockdown, and so on. Joel Hilliker, I think this is from last year, a year ago. The title is The Democrats' Conspiracy to Steal Elections. That has been the history. And so as Candace Owens says, you turn on the talking heads, you turn on the cable news networks, and there are the hosts, except at Fox, but there are the hosts saying, how can you say that mail-in ballots are unreliable? How can you say that that opens it up to fraud? They take their cue from the Democrat leadership, Nancy Pelosi and company, and then they are off and running. And as far as they are concerned, this is the surest, safest, most ethical way to run an election. And here they've got an example, a sampling right in front of their faces in New York City. We're 6 weeks into this congressional runoff. And they still don't know who won, thanks to the mail-in balloting. This is Kayleigh McEnany, the White House spokesman, just yesterday, clip 9.
Before I begin, it is day 42 of the botched New York City primary, where still there is no election results in one congressional race. This, as the New York Times notes, is due to, quote, the deluge of 400,000 mail-in ballots, previewing the, quote, challenges facing the nation as it looks towards conducting the November general election with mass mail-in voting.
42 days out. This is just in one congressional district. Now expand this out. Expand this out over 50 states. This is what the Democrats are screaming for, because they know they can drag this out for weeks and months. There was a scholar just the other day suggesting that if it drags out beyond the inauguration, that I guess Nancy Pelosi would be president. You get the president, you get the vice president out of the way, and then here comes Pelosi. So they're just hoping. That's wishful thinking on their part. If we can scheme and plot and do everything we can to change the system, or to use the words that Mr. Armstrong did, my father as well, bring down the system, then we can get our guy in there, even if he's just a puppet, even if he's just a figurehead. As I say, they've got an example right in front of their faces. All of these media complexes, they're right there in the heart of New York City. And as the White House press spokesman says yesterday, 42 days of a botched New York City primary. Here's how the liberal news network NBC reports on this botched election in New York City. Clip 10.
Tonight, 6 weeks after the New York Democratic primary, congressional candidate Suraj Patel doesn't know if he won or lost because election officials have yet to announce a winner.
It was just a complete mess of a system.
The reason? 10 times more New Yorkers, a whopping 1.8 million, requested absentee ballots than did 4 years ago. Experts tell NBC News New York election officials were woefully unprepared. Governor Andrew Cuomo had tried to make the process easier by sending postage-paid envelopes with all requested ballots. But that ended up backfiring because to be counted, ballots need to be postmarked with a date, something the post office doesn't usually do for prepaid metered mail. So those ballots, thousands of them, were not counted.
So NBC is going to have to delete that report pretty soon because there's no problem with mail-in ballots. That's what the talking heads are saying. I don't know how that report made it through the editor's room. But there they are acknowledging the disaster. And of course, Governor Cuomo, as per usual, he's got his fingerprints all over it. They know exactly what to do. They know exactly how to run these programs. They know exactly how to protect people from sickness. They know how to run an election. In fact, they're making people sicker, and they're rigging elections. And that's what they aim to do on a massive scale in November. This is from Victor Davis Hanson. He said, if there are voting irregularities in November, they will come mostly from the left and through the very mail-in balloting and vote harvesting they advocate. He says, we in California's 21st congressional district can attest to that. After having witnessed winner and incumbent Republican David Valadao in 2018, see his sizable lead mysteriously erode over the next several weeks as batches of harvested and mail-in ballots steadily appeared until his challenger won by a few hundred votes. You remember those districts in California and elsewhere? There were a handful. The Republicans, all the Republicans were in the lead. And then mysteriously, here comes the mail-in ballots. Here come the harvested ballots. And lo and behold, the Democrat wins by a few hundred votes. We saw this history in 2000. And if not for a slim majority at the Supreme Court, we probably would have had President Gore. This has been their history. As the Wall Street Journal writes, every time they've lost since 1968, they've called it illegitimate, except for the 49-state landslides. You see, it has to be like Nixon in 72 or Reagan in 84. If it's not a landslide, they will drag this out. Even the last election, when it was clear President Trump, I forget all the details, it's a bit hazy because we were here 6 hours ahead and watched the speech by President Trump the next morning. But Hillary Clinton, remember, she had her big party. They were supposed to win. Then they postponed it or something vague there. But it took a long time before them to even concede. And of course, we know in the bigger picture, they never did concede. because they were using the FBI, the DOJ, they were using all of these corrupt, these bad cops to try to destroy the Trump candidacy and the presidency. They just kept right on going. Comey gets fired 5 months in and he gets the special counsel appointed. That only just ended about a year ago. And now this year, of course, this has all been covered up by the other tragedies and crises. We've had all of this evidence come forward about the corruption that goes right up to the top of the previous administration. Barack Obama and Vice President Biden spying on Americans, spying on political opponents. You think that's a side benefit that the Democrats appreciate right about now? The bigger hope is to rig the election. But they're certainly pleased with the fact that the Durham investigation and all of this corruption that's been exposed, well, that's overshadowed by pandemics, by lockdowns. It says, the more interesting, this is the Wall Street Journal, what will Democrats do if Mr. Biden loses? What idiotic conspiracy theory will they concoct to explain their defeat? It's only just beginning. If you thought 2016 was crazy, if you thought the first part of 2020 was crazy, we saw a pretty good spike in our audience back in March and April, all those lockdown Saturday specials we had. How many people are going to be tuning in when they see how crazy and bizarre and evil the activities are, the actions are, of so many bad actors come November? What will they do if Biden loses? It says, I mean no disrespect to my liberal friends when I say, to borrow Mr. Biden's phrase, that I am absolutely convinced that Democrats won't accept the result if the Republican wins. I say this because, with only two exceptions, liberals have considered every GOP presidential victory in the last half century, more or less, illegitimate. Every single one. And it goes on and talks about the two exceptions, 1972 and 1984. You can't very well argue that it was unfair when Reagan's taking home 49 states out of 50. But if it's more of a tight race, oh, the corruption. Keep in mind that these people are guilty of the very thing they accuse their opponents of. That he rigged the election in 2016. He rigged it. He had Vladimir Putin's help. He had the Russians' help. Just remember this as we go forward. These people are guilty of what they accuse others of. They're guilty. It's the Democrat media complex that will not accept the results of an election if a Republican wins. That's been the history. And here they are busily preparing this audacious attempt to rig the 2020 election. It says here, after every other Republican presidential victory from 1968 forward, Democrats invented cockamamie theories that the GOP had won by illegitimate means. Every single time. Every single time. My father brings out in the article he wrote back in 2000, following the Bush-Gore controversy, how that in 1960, when Richard Nixon lost to JFK, just the tiniest of margins, and quite a lot of corruption, reports of corruption, of cheating in Cook County, Chicago, and these Democrat strongholds. He had a pretty good case to contest the election, but Nixon wouldn't do it. Nixon! I mean, after Donald Trump, he's like public enemy number two in the Democrats' eyes. Nixon walked away. He didn't want to do that to the country. He didn't want to see the country get divided over a hotly contested presidential election. So he conceded. You don't see that from the other side. And here they are blaring their horns that Donald Trump's going to be the one not to accept the results. They have it exactly backwards. Here's Barack Obama last week. We played this Friday. He was at that funeral service for John Lewis, talking about how that they had to, well, we have to have a mail-in vote. This is clip 13.
There are those in power who are doing their darndest to discourage people from voting by closing polling locations and targeting minorities and students with restrictive ID laws and attacking our voting rights with surgical precision, even undermining the Postal Service in the run-up to an election that's going to be dependent on mail-in ballots so people don't get sick.
Nobody at that funeral service, of course, is going to get sick. Hundreds of people, standing ovation, no social distancing. They'll be fine. But don't, if we have people go to polling booths, if we have them actually vote on election day at a polling booth, they're going to get sick. So we got to have mail-in ballots. It's just like that author of the COVID coup points out. One set of standards or rules for the left, and then another one for their opponents. My father, in that 2000 article following the Bush-Gore election and all of the scandalous activity that surrounded that, he said, the Florida vote scandal will poison our political system more than any scandal of the past 8 years. Now, that's quite a statement, because this is following the 8 years of Bill Clinton's presidency. Quite a few scandals. We had a lot to say about the character of leadership, character in crisis. That booklet sprung from some of the things happening there in the late 1990s. And then along comes Vice President Gore and George W. Bush. Clinton's been in office for 8 years. He's finishing his presidency. And George W. Bush wins the election, and the radical Democrat media complex would not accept it. They would not accept it. Al Gore was not about to walk away like Nixon did in 1960. No way. So they got it into the courts. It worked its way up to the Supreme Court. Judges. They want lawyers and judges to decide the outcome, because if they can get enough of them, never mind the will of the people. He says it eclipses all of those scandals. The corrosive process is so deeply entrenched, it will continue from one election to the next. Here again, the trumpet said it first. This article's 20 years ago. And my father's just saying, look, we're just going to see this in every election here on out. The only exceptions were the Barack Obama victories in 2008 and 2012. On those evenings, they called the race right away. 8, 9 o'clock, Barack Obama's giving his acceptance speech. Everything was A-OK with those elections, but not so in any other election that a Republican wins. At the very least, we have to wait to the next day before we can even declare him the victor. Now they want to stretch it out for weeks. Now they want to stretch it out for months. It will continue from one election to the next, my father said 20 years ago. It is tearing our political system apart. That's what we're seeing. It's already torn apart. There's so many things that have happened just this year. It's never going to be the same. Elections, pandemics, the economy. It says bias and partisan lawyers and judges are trying to decide who wins the presidency. It is building a warring spirit between the two parties. No democratic nation can be led in the midst of such bitter division. Pretty prescient words. Pretty prophetic. A 20-year-old article at thetrumpet.com. My father says, does anybody really believe these men love the Constitution of this great land more than their man becoming president? Do they love the Constitution more than their man? More than their party? It says, here is the heart of this crisis. I believe that they can't even relate to what I'm writing. They have been practicing this evil for too long putting self above the Constitution has become a way of life. He says, here is the real constitutional crisis. They've become people, as he went on to say later in the article, who hate law. They hate the Constitution. There's so much poison, so much hatred, so much division in the system. It's irreparable. My father in that 2000 article talked about one commentator saying that in the course of this crisis, one commentator said, now here the Democrats outmaneuvered the Republicans. And my father says, outmaneuvered? Is that what this is about? Is that how elections are to play out? Who can outmaneuver the other side in court? Who can get the sharpest legal argument? Who can get the largest panel of activist judges? It's going to be about who maneuvers who, or who outmaneuvers the other. That's what my father was talking about back in 2000, 20 years ago. Never mind the Constitution. That article from 2 years ago, Saving America from the Radical Left. In that piece, my father says, we're getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. We're getting a hard look. They will do anything to seize power. They will destroy an economy to seize power. They will destroy the livelihoods of tens of thousands of Americans to seize power. They will scare you to death. They will scare you back into your home to seize power. They will spy on hundreds, perhaps thousands of Americans to stay in power. They will lie about their political opponent. They will spy and lie to try to destroy and conquer, all so that they can stay in power. That, as I say, is quite the side benefit for the Democrat media complex this year, as all of that illegal behavior, that illegal activity going on in the months leading up to President Trump's election and the years after, all of that corruption being exposed. Here was President Trump yesterday dropping a few hints about what the Durham investigation is turning up. Clip 3.
So we caught President Obama and Biden spying on the campaign. Biden was even saying, using the Logan Act, which is exactly what they used on Flynn. They used the Logan Act, and they had it down in writing in a White House meeting where President Obama and Vice President Biden were there. Biden suggested the Logan Act, which I understand very well, but General Flynn probably didn't. But they used it on him very, very terribly. What they've done to him and so many other people, they've destroyed their lives.
Destroyed so many lives. He mentions the meeting where Obama and Biden were there. And Biden's putting forward the suggestion. How about the Logan Act? Got to take him out, Flynn, because, well, he used to work for Obama. And then Obama fired him. And Flynn would know. Flynn would have been the first one to figure out this conspiracy, this coup d'etat. And so they took him out. They set him up, and then they took him out. You know the history there. We've covered it so many times before on this program. Here's the president again, clip 4.
I caught them and we caught them spying, using the intelligence apparatus of our country to spy on an opponent's or the opposing party's campaign, both before and after the election.
Before and after. And after it went on, thanks to Strzok and Comey and Mueller and all of his corrupt lawyers, it continued for years, and people's lives were destroyed. Sidney Powell's the lawyer that took over late in the game for General Mike Flynn, and she finally got him, although the judge is still trying to string that out. They won't let go. They will not let go, even when they've been proven wrong, even when they've been proven to be corrupt. They just keep right on lying. They just keep right on spying. They just keep right on going after their opponents. If there's one thing the Democrats can agree upon, it is to stay together, to use the crisis, take advantage of it. You don't find this kind of unity in the Republican Party because, like Candace Owens says, there's too many weak Republicans that want to play it safe, that they don't want, even the Wall Street Journal writer that I just wrote a read from earlier. He says, I mean no disrespect to my liberal friends. You see, you've got to try to be tactful with them. I mean, if you're going to expose them, don't just go all the way. You got to hold back. You got to pull punches. You got to try to, as best you can, you got to try to win a little bit of favor from the Wall Street Journal types, from the New York Times, the Washington Post, all the news networks and such. Anyway, Sidney Powell, she came in and aggressively fought for General Flynn and finally had the DOJ drop that case entirely. Well, she was on Fox yesterday as well, and they were talking about the spying, not just the spying of the Trump campaign, but the spying that was routine. It was routine during the Obama years. This is clip 5.
Obviously, in a decision that was released in 2017, talking about hundreds, if not thousands, of illegal unmaskings. And essentially, Comey gave the FBI and private contractors unfettered access to the NSA database to mine it for whatever they wanted to mine it for. And people were doing about queries to get information on whoever they wanted to get it about, as if it were their own private Encyclopedia Britannica. So there are scads of violations, and I think they go back to 2014 as to Flynn, probably not long after he left DIA.
So this is massive abuses of power under the Obama administration, deeper and more widespread than people may realize.
I'll say deeper and more widespread than people realize, says this this journalist in response. A massive abuse of power. Massive. And yet the media could care less about this corruption, this evil, this two-tiered standard of justice. Back and forth they go. They go totally and completely willing to destroy the lives of opponents, even as they break every rule or law that they can do in order to carry out their acts of destruction. We're getting a hard look, as my father said, at what they're willing to do in order to seize power and to stay in power. Well, these two, Sidney Powell and that journalist, they talked again about not just what was happening with the Trump campaign or how the Obama administration was going after the Trump campaign, but what they were just doing, what John Brennan was doing during the Obama years. This is clip 6.
Well, don't forget, John Brennan was spying on members of Congress with CIA assets and NSA tools of electronic surveillance. They were spying on anybody they wanted to spy on. And then Brennan also formed this thing called a fusion cell or the hammer or whatever people want to call it that was used to just explode surveillance information and activity over all kinds of Americans, particularly Congress. And in fact, I've been told even I was surveilled several years ago.
Which wouldn't come as a surprise because Cheryl Atkinson, remember? You had James Risen, I believe, from Fox News, that New York Times reporter, the AP reporters that had their phones tapped? All of these members of Congress? That's been exposed. This was the Obama people, John Brennan, Comey, and so on, and it went right up to the White House. Spying on their fellow Americans, spying on their political opponents, using, as President Trump said there, using the intelligence apparatus of our country to go around snooping for dirt, anything that they could get on their political opponents. And of course, they carried out these nefarious acts on a massive scale when Donald Trump came along and they found out that Actually, quite a few Americans supported him. One last clip here from President Trump yesterday in his interview on Fox, clip 7.
I do hear it's breathtaking what they found. That's all I can say, breathtaking. And hopefully it'll come out soon. But it's beyond what anybody ever thought even possible, how bad it is. How bad it is and how corrupt it is.
It's beyond what anybody even thought. He's talking about the investigations, Durham and some of these others that Bill Barr has told us about even recently. It's breathtaking what these people have found, what these investigators have found on the investigators from a few years ago. So we'll see what happens. My father, going back to the Saving America article, says, in the media aided and abetted the whole process. The media helped the dirty cops. The media helped them, aided and abetted the whole process. The more stories that come out, my father wrote, the clearer this ugly reality becomes. This corruption on a deep level, this is corruption on a deep level, so deep that most people won't even believe it. Well, more and more facts are being uncovered. And so they're using the pandemic, they're using the lockdown, they're using the election, they're using anything that they can to try to cover this up as well as rig the election. He says, before the election, just about everyone believed Hillary Clinton would be the next president. If she had won, none of this corruption would have come to light. See, that's something that they want to keep covered forever. Satan doesn't want to be exposed. They don't want to be exposed for their evil acts, their evil behavior. So they're doing anything and everything they can to cover it up and to seize power and maintain that power. They know if they're in the power position then, that all of this corruption, it never comes to light, never sees the light of day. That's what my father wrote just a couple of years ago. I'll conclude here. We've got a few minutes. I'll read a few emails that have come in recent days. This one writes, and I think we've quoted from him before, thank you for a healthy breakfast. Another one says, good morning to Stephen Fleury. It's actually 10 o'clock. I guess he means at night, probably so, yes. 10 o'clock in Papua New Guinea. Thank you for always giving us a clear direction of world events in the light of Bible prophecy. It's always very encouraging to watch the Trumpet Daily first and then watch world news. It helps us have a better understanding of the news. Thanks so very much. Another one here says, I've been watching the program since it began, and what a weapon of truth in our arsenal of godly weapons against the astounding barrage of satanic lies and deceit. Even after more than 40 years in God's church, it is still staggering to see the world losing its collective mind so rapidly. After listening to Barack Obama, this is from last Friday's show, I'm reminded of Psalm 64, and then he quotes some of the verses. The secret counsel of the wicked from the insurrection of the workers of lawlessness. It says, wet their tongue, like a sword, arrows of bitter words, shoot in secret at the perfect shoot at him, encourage themselves in evil. I'm not sure which translation this is, but it says, but God shall shoot them. Shoot at them with an arrow. Suddenly they shall be wounded by this work of Almighty God. That's paraphrasing what he said there at the end. But you can look at that psalm on your own time a little bit later. That's from Psalm 64, talking about God intervening to help and to protect those who are coming under attack. Another one here says, great show, need this. We need this daily to keep sane in this crazy world. Another one writes, I thank God for his protection and encouragement on our lives to be able to boldly declare his truth at this time. I look forward to your program daily. And finally, it says here, it's interesting, Mr. Fleury, during the letter section you read out, first thing someone said to share with to share the TD with people. It says that actually is true. I've been taking advantage of this COVID-19 pandemic to forward this program It says, people ask, how can you be so happy? Or how do you keep it together? And I tell them I watch a program that puts everything that we are experiencing right now into perspective from a biblical point of view. It says, if I didn't have this program, you wouldn't see peace and tranquility within me. Well, if you'd like to submit some feedback, you can email the program at td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We thank you for joining us on today's broadcast, and we'll see you tomorrow.